Hey, have you enjoyed the week so far? I'm not sure if both my ears are working right. This half of the room, have you enjoyed CPPCon so far? You guys, what do you think? I don't know. They might have had an extra decibel. Let's hear all of you one more time. Thank you. This has been such an awesome week for C++ and also a really festival atmosphere here. We want to thank you all very much for coming, and it's been a blast. So we're now at our final plenary session, so I'd like to introduce the speaker, whose name happens to also be Herb. Please give a warm welcome. Hi, my name is Herb. You're supposed to say hi, Herb. It has been 1 year, 3 months, and 18 days since my last template metaprogram. Today I want to talk about the importance of resisting complexity. I never thought it would happen to me. I was introduced to complexity by a friend. Or at least I thought he was a friend. He showed me a cool programming trick on his computer at home in private, and it really worked on his compiler. And so I started using a little complexity, but just a little bit, and only at home. But after a while, as I got used to using complexity, something strange happened. The thrill sort of faded. It didn't seem as complex anymore. It seemed simple, even though other people around me told me it was still too complex. So I started hanging out with people after work for social complexity on bar napkins. But then it started eating into work time, and we started bringing it into the office and checking it in. Some of you were at the template metaprogramming hackathon last night, and here's a picture. Seriously, the reason that I want to talk about complexity is people who are under the influence of complexity often think that they're thinking more clearly, more lucidly, and really that's not true. But we get so used to complexity that we should remember that it's fine in moderation. Once you know a lot about anything, including C++, it's really hard to forget that you're an expert. So there's roughly, give or take, it's hard to get numbers. People who use C++ on their day jobs is roughly around 3 million for some time. And it's gradually it was pretty flat in the 2000s. It's increasing a bit now. But compare that to many of the experts that you've heard of. So how many of you use GNU, GCC? Lots. Great. So you're using the standard library implementation libstud C++, which has been around for quite a while. And just over the last almost 20 years, I asked some of the maintainers, you know, how many people have contributed to this? It's a well-known open source project. Everybody knows that everybody contributes to open source projects. How many people really have contributed to it, say more than just a few lines, like have contributed something significant to it? Answer seems to be about 30 in the world in the last roughly 20 years. How many of you use Clang? If you're using Xcode, that's also Clang, so put up your hand. Okay. You know how many people are developers of the standard library that ships with Clang, libc++? The answer until 12 months ago was 2. They were both here at this week. One is now getting on a plane, the other's still here in the audience. The answer now is about 5 to 7 who've contributed more than, say, just a couple of lines, who've contributed something significant. I was not able to get a number of Boost developers. That's been going on for almost 20 years now. I figure somewhere in the order of, say, 300 people. Maybe that's high, I don't know, but let's be generous. And ISO WG21 meeting attenders, who've like ever attended more than one C++ meeting. I didn't actually go through all the minutes and count, but I'd be surprised if it was more than 300 people. So here is a Venn diagram of all the C++ developers in the world, and the smaller circle is all of the libc++ developers, libstud C++ developers, Boost developers, and anyone who's attended more than one ISO C++ meeting. And if I had put a border, a line around that circle, you couldn't see the smaller circle. I actually had to turn off the line around the circle, otherwise you couldn't see the small one. By the way, can you see it? we need to give good guidance to the big circle while still teaching the advanced tools for people who need advanced code, including very advanced code. But A, not everyone needs to know all of it, and not everyone who knows it needs to use it all the time. So that's a theme of this talk. In fact, if you go back to Bjarne Stroustrup's wonderful keynote on Tuesday, interesting factoid. If you go through his slides, do you know how many double ampersands, R-value references, are in his entire talk? Nice round number. So the value of simple, usable defaults is really priceless. By the way, I mentioned this on the panel on Monday night, the most important C++ book you should go out and buy it at the bookstore now is A Tour of C++ by Bjarne Stroustrup. We have, you stole my thunder. People are yelling, it's sold out, I know. So, but the good news is that you can still go to the bookstore and they will order it and ship it to you because they do have free shipping. So go to the bookstore anyway or Amazon or anywhere. In particular, this book is important because it encapsulates in one place what every C++ programmer should be expected to know. Now that's really important. If somebody's coming new to C++ or they're learning modern C++ after having used C++ 98, they often ask, well, okay, what's all the stuff you need to know? And well, look over here on Stack Overflow and Scott's got a book and Bjarne's got this longer book and there's some chapters in there you ought to know. Here is 180 pages that some of you will have time to read on your plane home this weekend from cover to cover that tells you the stuff that everyone needs to know about C++. Recommend this book. Let people know. Help get the word out. It's really important. I'm very glad that Bjarne has made that available. In this talk, I want to focus on defaults, basic styles and idioms. Now, some experts have pushed back at me on this. When I say the word default, some experts treat it as a bad word. They say, you know, you're dumbing down the language. No, I'm not. A default is not dumbing down. Especially a default does not mean, oh, just do this blindly and don't think about it. That's not what it's about. You should know your other options too, but the default is about, unless you have a good reason to do something else, which does involve thinking, don't overthink it. Just do this, unless you have a reason to do something more complex. In particular, this goes right in line with the general good advice, including these three items at the bottom of the screen, which are the titles of three of the first 8 or 9 items in C++ coding standards, not coincidentally. Write for clarity and correctness first. Avoid premature optimization. In particular, prefer clear code over optimal code. Now that's almost swearing to a C++ audience. Like, we should be optimal by default. No, you shouldn't. You should have good performance by default. And if anyone tries to tell you that C++ has been about writing optimal code by default, correct them gently, because it has not. C++ has always been about writing efficient code, not perfectly efficient, not optimally efficient, but good efficiency code by default, and always being able to open the hood and take control over memory layouts, over the actual, even down to the instructions that get done, when you need to. You don't always need to open the hood. So this talk is not about don't think, it's about let's not overthink, because isn't it true we revel in complexity? How many of you, you know, we're not gonna put a camera on you, so none of your friends here will tell you, how many of you would say, yeah, you know, reveling in complexity has described me at least at some point in my coding career? I see all the speakers have their hands up, that's good. So this is good, we're acknowledging our problem. Then we can start to deal with it. We overcome denial, step one. Let's talk about range-based for loops. You know, we can overthink range-based for loops. I think that everything I want to say about range-based for loops pretty much fits on one simple slide, and here it is. Why do this when you can do this? Any questions? Now, some of you may be saying, oh, shouldn't I be writing auto ref ref there? Maybe, but wait for it. We'll talk a bit more about ref ref at the end. But this is perfectly good. In fact, no matter whether C is const or not, this does the right thing, because autoref also, because it goes through the iterators, if you get a const iterator back that dereferences to a const T, it will deduce the right thing. So it'll be read-only for a read-only collection. This is simple code. If you are traversing every element of a collection, prefer to write range 4. Now, if you need early break, range 4 doesn't support that yet, but ranges look like there's a range proposal coming for the November meeting that I think will address some of that and even enable that. Certainly, if you're writing a for loop that reaches every element of the collection, just write range 4 with auto ref in case you want to modify in place. Soon, thanks to Stefan Lavaved, Stefan, are you here? Wave if you're here. Meow, okay. Ugh. If I see one more code example checked in with kitty, I will scream. For E colon C is going to be a shorthand that the standards committee is seriously considering, and therefore some compilers, once this committee will bless it, hopefully at the next meeting for C++17, will already start implementing it. You don't have to wait 3 years to start using this. That basically says, you know what, we're going to declare a variable E for you, and it'll be of type deduce whatever, so the constants will flow through. And the nice thing about this is, the first thing you might think is, oh, but how can C++ do that? Isn't that a breaking change? How many of you suspect that the last line may be a breaking change that can change the meaning of valid existing C++ 14 code today? Oh, you're all scared. I thought it was, and then Stefan kept reminding me, no, you can't actually write that today. You can't use an existing variable. You always have to declare a new one. So we'll just drop the type. The default, the sensible default, will be essentially the same as before, autoref or autoref, which will do the right thing. This does not mean that you can't lift the hood and write it yourself if you want a certain type, or even write the naked iterator-based for loop if you want to do something more, like break partway through or skip elements. That's all fine, but defaults matter. You are often influencers of people in your companies, of people who ask questions on Stack Overflow, who participate in the community. So please, you teach starting from the bottom of the screen up, not the other way around. Now let's talk about smart pointers. Use smart pointers effectively, but I still want you to use lots and lots and lots of raw pointers and references. They're great. Yeah, stunned silence. So we hate pointers and references, raw pointers and references. Why would you recommend those? Of course you should write those. Those should be your default parameter types and return types still. Let's talk about that. Now, clearly, the code on the left-hand side of the screen is stuff that was perfectly good code in books some time ago, but we tell people don't write that anymore. In fact, basically all the red stuff shouldn't pass check-in anymore in new code. So don't use owning pointers, don't use explicit new, don't use delete, except if you have a real performance need encapsulated down deep inside some low-level data structure, maybe. But FYI, I believe even the entire STL can be implemented with no loss of performance using unique putter and not using new and delete. We're about to try that. And so that exception may be even a much smaller set than you might think, because unique putter is roughly free. It is very razor thin overhead, often none at all over a raw pointer. Modern C++ says, use unique pointer, use a shared pointer, use make unique. So if you want to write new to allocate a new object, use make unique by default. Now, if you know, again, it's a default, if you know the object is going to be shared, definitely use make shared by default. If you don't know, you're creating an object and handing it out, you don't know if it's going to be shared, start with make unique, because you can always move that into a shared pointer that then can be used in a shared pointer group. But if you know it's going to be shared, use make shared. For delete, don't write anything. This is advice we're giving people. How many of you follow that advice already in your code bases today, at least for new code? Looks like about half. Okay. How many of you have tried to follow this advice and still found some dangling pointer problems with reference counted smart pointers? A few. I have a slide for you. I know what the problem is. There is a cure. Wait a few slides. A very important qualifier on this. This slide says don't use owning raw pointers and references. What does that mean? really a pointer that you should be calling delete on at some point. Non-owning pointers and references are awesome. Keep writing them, especially for parameters and return values. When you talk about structured lifetimes, where one function calls another and that callee executes entirely within the scope of the caller, because then you return and resume the caller, anything that the calling function is keeping alive stays alive for as long as the called function. Now, there is a reentrancy case, we'll talk about that. But generally, this is nice, it's Russian dolls all the way down, where the lifetimes nest perfectly. You don't need ownership transfer down a call stack, unless you're going to, you know, take something out of the call stack. You don't need to talk about ownership. So in C++ 98 Classic, we would say, hey, if you need to look at a widget, and it's a required parameter, and I'm ignoring const, we'll come to that later, pass it by reference. Or if it's optional, pass it by pointer. Are you ready for the modern C++ advice? It's the same. It's the same advice. Now, if you have a unique pointer, a shared pointer, then you want to dereference it, or call get to pass a raw reference or a raw pointer. But raw references, raw pointers, for the win. They still are the preferred parameter type. Think about it this way. If you're not convinced about that and you feel uncomfortable, think about it this way. Unless you're actually talking about ownership transfer, in which case it is perfectly valid to pass smart pointers, and I'll show that in just a second. Unless the called function actually is going to participate in the ownership somehow, if he just wants to look at a widget, why on earth does the callee care if you're managing that lifetime by a unique putter, by a shared putter, by whether it's global, whether it's on the stack? He should be agnostic to that, and this is how to write that. Very simple. And the classic advice is still true. But anti-patterns hurt pain. As STL would likely say, he's got me in the habit of talking like this. Oh, it's viral. So the anti-pattern here is just routinely passing a reference counted pointer, even by reference. And this is not just about shared putter, it's about COM pointers or any kind of reference counted pointers, the ones in Boost as well. Or passing it by value, which is even worse, if you don't really intend to keep a copy after you return, to participate in the ownership somehow. Because, if you go back to that, because what's the performance of the lower left code? You're going to do an increment decrement on every call, which isn't the end of the world, but A, it is an atomic operation, so there's synchronization and it's not that cheap. And second, this is premature pessimization. Premature pessimization is when you have two options that are equally complex, neither is really simpler than the other, well, you should take the faster one. This is opting for something that is actually a little more difficult and slower. If all you need to do is look at the widget, pass a reference, a raw reference. A related anti-pattern, besides passing function parameters, is in loops, when people will frequently make copies of smart pointers in loops, and that's even worser. So we don't want to do those things. For example, Andre, when I was discussing this with him some months ago, he mentioned that in late 2013, Facebook had an experience with this where their product RocksDB, which was passing shared putters by value quite a bit, changed those to pass by raw pointer and raw reference, and observed a 4x speed improvement from 100k to 400k queries per second in one of their benchmarks, and other improvements across the board. This stuff matters. If we're asking for needless work, we'll pay for needless work. So I wrote a Guru of the Week about this recently. Reference counted smart pointers, as well as unique pointer, any owning pointer, are about managing an owned object's lifetime. Only use it as a parameter type if you actually want to talk about the lifetime, you want to participate in it. The callee is going to keep a copy of it to put in some sort of global registry or something, so he's going to participate in keeping it alive. And this applies to any reference counted smart pointer. But we have shared pointer, so we should know about that. So how do we pass smart pointers? If you are writing a factory that produces a new object, especially an object that's polymorphic, so you're not going to return it by value if it's polymorphic in particular, then prefer to return a unique putter by default. And I will show, if you know if it's going to be shared, prefer returning a shared putter and using make shared. That's in the second half of the slide. But a default, a good default, is return a unique putter. Why? Because if you don't know it, that something more is needed like shared putter, Anybody who gets that can do whatever they want with it. If they ignore the return type, it doesn't fall off the floor. The return value doesn't fall off the floor. It gets correctly cleaned up. Although, why are they asking the factory if they're not going to look at it? But whatever. Maybe they're passing it as an R value to something else that is in a temporary expression, and cleanup just happens. If they want a shared putter, they can move it into that. If they have their own juicy custom shared putter that they are using in their shop that's non-standard and gloriously customized, they can call .get and move it into that. This is what we should be returning from factories. Similarly, if we're accepting, our function is accepting ownership of an object passed by unique putter by value. That shows that we're consuming the widget. You can't call that with a unique putter in the caller without saying std move. And so that helps you see I'm transferring ownership in. We'll come back to that one. If I want to reseat, notice it's not about changing the widgets. It's about if I want to reseat the unique putter itself to point to a different object, well, that's a typical in-out parameter. Take that by reference. And I have no idea why you would ever legitimately want to write const unique putter reference. Why would you want to simply just look at it? There's nothing useful I know of that you can do to a unique putter, except get the widget, in which case you should have just taken widget ref. So as far as I know, writing that as a parameter type is a thinko. Now, as I mentioned, if you know that the object is going to be shared that a factory returns, definitely return a shared putter, and you're going to use make shared inside because that gives you a nice optimization. It's one memory allocation instead of two, and some better locality that you'll keep benefiting from. If you're going to have a function that takes a copy of the shared putter, pass the shared putter by value. And notice this is saying I am going to keep a copy. Either I'm going to put it in some other data structure or do something else with it. And this will retain a reference count. If I want to reseat a shared putter, that is, make it point to something else, pass it by reference. That's as if it will or it might reseat the shared putter. And finally, if you're in the share case, but it's not unconditional, sometimes you're going to keep a copy, sometimes you won't, then take const ref, and then if you take a copy, then copy inside, if you actually need a copy. That way you're not going to incur the cost of the reference count bump in the cases where you don't actually keep a copy. So that's if you conditionally keep a copy, if you might share. How many of you are thinking, hey, wait a minute, for sync, shouldn't that be unique putter ref ref? I'm curious, how many people are thinking that? Yes, I have slides for you later. So how to do it right? This is partial advice. Never pass smart pointers by value. Prefer, unless you actually mean to traffic in ownership, prefer raw pointers and references. They're still great. Express ownership with unique putter by default, but shared putter if you're going to share, and use make shared in that case. Now, when I post these slides will be available after the conference, I put this yellow post-it to obscure it on top, so when you print it out, you can't print out this version. I want you to print out the version two slides from now, where I'm going to add one more line. I promise to tell you the pitfall with reference-counted shared putters. This is something that, if you've been using reference-counted pointers for some time, you've probably fallen into. I know that most teams of any significant size, in software of any significant complexity, that especially that go over a boundary and then get callbacks into themselves, they sometimes find they drop a reference count. Like, what's going on? And this is not unique to shared putter. It happens with COM pointers. It happens with any other reference counted pointer you might use. If you're an Objective-C developer, it will happen with those. They're slightly different with retained release semantics and so forth and ARC. But this principle applies in general. So let's talk about the one case, because I believe as a community, we now know exactly how to simply articulate it and to simply solve it. First, here's the problem. Take a second to absorb that code and think about what would be a problematic caller. So we have some shared putter that's static or global, non-heap, or it's aliased on the stack, non-stack or aliased on the stack, GP. It's a shared putter to a widget. Now I've got a function f that takes a widget by reference, then calls some other function and then uses the widget. So function f looks fine to me. Oh, by the way, function G happens to, among other things, reseat the global pointer. Maybe it's got a reference to it that's passed through another parameter. Maybe it's some globally visible thing on the heap that it can get access to. One way or another, it reseats it. And now in your code, if you happen to call f of star GP, because you're following the advice I just gave you to just pass raw references, right? You're following the advice I gave you, and now what will happen? Bad stuff. Why? What's wrong with this code? Shout it out. So the assignment to GP might release the last reference count on the smart pointer, might not, might pass your unit tests. But if it does release the last reference count, then in F, when I call G, I'm suddenly actually blowing away my W object. This is not obvious. And no, that's laugh-worthy. That's not obvious. That is so not obvious. And then I use W, and it might or might not be there anymore. Might be destroyed. The memory might even be gone. The anti-pattern, so what is wrong in the code? Like, who do you blame? Don't dereference a non-local, possibly aliased shared pointer. That should no longer pass code review. I'll show you in a second what I mean and what to write instead. Pin it using an unaliased local copy. So you want a shared pointer that's, you can dereference a shared pointer safely without this reentrancy problem if it's on the stack and nobody else has a pointer or reference to the shared pointer. So you haven't effectively made it global by passing out an alias to your stack-based shared pointer. So in the code at the bottom, you're perfectly immune to this. Why? Because you say, before I enter my call tree, which could be hundreds of functions deep, just once at the top where I go from knowing that this object is owned by a shared pointer to passing it in at the very top for the first time, converting it to a reference, only there, take my extra addref, take my extra increment, once. And then for the whole tree. And you can statically test for this and do lint-like testing for this to make sure that you only dereference local unaliased reference counted pointers. And if you do that, you will eliminate that entire class of problems. And it only costs you the extra addref, the extra increment, exactly once, exactly where you need it. And it's an easy pattern to follow. By the way, when you dereference it, you might also get a pointer. And one easy way to do that is to call a member function. Do the same thing, realize there you are also converting to a raw pointer and follow the same advice. Just in case the member function is re-entrant somehow and might change the location of the object itself that you're executing the member function in. That one happens less often, but follow this simple advice, this one simple trick, it's the modern way, and I won't make it link bait, I'll tell you the answer, and you won't get the problem on the left-hand side of the screen. So now, here's the summary of how to do it right, and I'll add just that one green line. Remember, take the unaliased and local copy of the call tree, and don't pass the direct dereference of a heap-based one. So that's reference counting. Write, make unique by default, make shared when you need to instead of new and delete. Don't use owning pointers or references, but remember that non-owning pointers or references are ideal on function parameters and return values, because they're the stack, they're structured case, the scoped case, where they're simply observing, and they're wonderfully efficient and good for you, just as they always have been. The only time you actually want to copy or assign or pass a reference counted pointer or any smart pointer is if you actually want to deal in the lifetime. So if you actually want to modify the lifetime semantics, do it there. It's funny how people are afraid of four little letters. How many of you have had one or more water cooler conversations, arguments, debates about auto? Yeah. So I'm going to tell you the truth, and you can tell everybody else that they're wrong. Are we good with that? Yeah. Like, we're all, like, even we're all going to agree. But let me offer some guidance. Let me justify why I'm offering the guidance, and it's up to you, we're all grown-ups, to decide whether you'll follow it yourself. But it's guidance that I think is simple, works well, saves from pitfalls, therefore it makes your code simpler, so it's a good default to use, and is part of a broader shift in the syntax and style of modern C++ that, as it continues to move to a regular, simpler style. Now, our first plenary speaker, Nigel Tufnell, that wasn't one of the options, and oh, it should have been. I was looking, I went to the Scott Myers hair poll site because I wanted to see if you could put a write-in response, but no, you couldn't. So Nigel Tufnell, also known as Christopher Guest, who has played that character on Spinal Tap, it's okay, it's really simple. Auto is not that hard. And in fact, if you get Scott's book, which is almost out, there are two items saying roughly what I'm about to say. Some of the details are different, saying roughly what I'm about to say about using auto. Here's the spoiler in one slide. When you're declaring a local variable, this is all about when you're declaring a local variable, if you want the type to track, and I'll give you reasons why you often do, simply deduce it. And the easiest way to do that is to have the type of that local variable be auto. Yes, there will be times when you want to have the type stick, and that's perfectly good. The advice is not to use just deduce everywhere. The advice is to use auto pretty much everywhere. Because auto does not always mean deduce. You can, as the second last line shows, use auto and still explicitly ask for a type. And that makes it concrete. Now you might say, well, why would I do that instead of just the last line? That's a style point, but I hope to convince you there are at least some reasons to consider, even from stylistic grounds, but also on correctness grounds, the second last line. But they're both good. If you want to make a type track, which makes your code more robust and maintainable, deduce it. You'll be guaranteed don't get conversions and other advantages. To make a type stick, do say it, but you can still use auto. So consider this code. What does this code do? What would you name the function? Anybody want to throw out any function names? Say again? Add another? Hey, that's a good one. Add if not there. Okay, that's even better. Add if not there. Anyone else? Everybody in agreement? How about append unique? So we've got a container. It's pretty much the same as what you did. I'm just trying to use the STL style because, hey, it's there. So we want to append a unique value. There's a container, a value. We do a find to see whether it's in there. If the find returns end, it wasn't there. And we push it back, and we're good movers. And then we assert it's not empty because that's just a good thing to do. How hard was that? We'll come back to this code very quickly. Why not just deduce the type? There are arguments why you shouldn't deduce the type. This isn't just about using auto. This is about, oh, I don't like type deduction. It scares me. Well, the arguments often fall into the category of, at least the ones you hear the most often, well, I can't see the type in my code, therefore I worry. And occasionally that can be a valid thing. I'm not saying it's not. Most of the time, that's overthinking. And in particular, saying, oh, what is the type of something? Well, first of all, if you have an IDE, this is the minor argument because it doesn't really matter. But if you have an IDE, even Emacs, then it doesn't matter because you can see the type. Also, it reflects a bias, which is much more important, to code against implementations, concrete types, rather than capabilities, interfaces. And if you look at that example we just saw, that was hardly unreadable, and yet there was no concrete type mentioned there, unless you count void as a concrete type for, to be pedantic. I call it not a concrete type. It's not a real type. It's void. It's nothing. So there's no concrete type mentioned here at all. What type is container or value? Oh, well, that's, I don't know, actually. Just some type that I can call push back on and call begin and end on. What's a value? Something I can move into that container's pushback. The container should also have empty. But when I call .empty, what type does .empty return? Well, you might say bool. Well, who says? For a long time, it returned some weird conversion to something bool-like, but who cares? You don't want to know, you don't need to know what it is. It's something testable like a bool. Good enough. So for templates, for return values, we often don't use those types anyway, especially what we call functions and expressions. We don't explicitly type those types in our code anyway. So I point this out as an example, just maybe to be less afraid. Because, you know, once we realize we're already doing this a lot, maybe that makes it less fearful. Now let's talk about correctness. With deduction, you always get the right type. I want a new local variable of his basic type. So if I am now going to take v and call begin on it, is this a good line of code? Would that pass check-in? More to the point, would that pass compilation? Why wouldn't it pass compilation? Const, right. It should be, well, it might be const iterator. That would be good. I could do that instead, but I'd have to think about it. Now, and if I change the parameter type for any reason, like maybe it's const today, but then later I change the parameter to be non-const because my function also does some modification that it didn't do before. Now I've got to go through and do a ripple to update parameter types if it switches between, say, const and non-const. If you just say auto, which is a great default, it just finds the right type. And it's correct, including under maintenance. So let's talk about maintainability. Using deduction, because it tracks the type, makes your code often more robust under maintenance. And it means that we can actually change our code more, introducing fewer drive-by bugs or other things that need to be updated while we're updating our code. Let's say, for example, that I change the code from line 1 to line 2. I've added a .0, which makes the 42, instead of being an integer, be a floating point value. Now this code compiles, but under maintenance, I've changed that to be floating point, and I forgot to update that variable type. Maybe I didn't intend to have a silent narrowing conversion there, because that's what'll happen. The code compiles and narrows. If I have a factory that returns, say, returns a widget by value, and if under maintenance the factory changes to return a gadget, which happens to be convertible to a widget, then we now are getting that conversion and we're not tracking the type. Now, if we really wanted a widget, that's fine. If we want to stay with widget, even if the factory changes to gadget, that's fine. Very often we don't. And if I have a map that's iterator and I call begin on the dictionary, but then I realize, you know what, map? Map is so tree-ish, and I've heard of these nice hash-ish. It's got to be a bad Washington joke there. Unordered containers, I'll just change my map to an unordered map because most uses just work. It's largely a drop-in replacement for common cases, and this code compiles and then fails to compile. What do I do? And then I have the ripple. I have to add unordered map there because I have the maintenance ripple. In each case, if I had put auto, I would have avoided the silent narrowing conversion, track the type. If I'd said auto in the second case, I would have continued to use a gadget, which is often usable as a widget, but I would have retained the type in its extra characteristics. And with the third, auto, I would have tracked the container type when I've used a replacement container that's otherwise compatible. These are good features. Now, a third reason to use type deduction is performance. Now, this is one of those ones where if you want to convince a C++ audience, as long as you can make a credible argument that, hey, do X is good for performance, they'll like jump in a river or a lake. You know, there could be sharks and it doesn't matter because they'll swim fast, they're efficient. And give me performance is like it's like a will-o'-the-wisp for it. It's a way to draw in C++ developers. So I'm going to assert that using auto gives you better performance by default also, and the reason is because you're guaranteed no conversions. If you use auto without otherwise, as we'll see in the second part, talking about a specific type, you are guaranteed there are no conversions. It means no temporary objects. It means no extra work being done that's invisible, that otherwise we sometimes hand-wring over. And there's usability. So finally, yes, there are certain types that are hard to spell, that are inconvenient to spell, lambdas, binders, helpers, and unless you want to get really familiar with decal type, and I am not suggesting that, auto is your friend. And finally, I know I have to say, and it's less typing, but you know what? I have to say that because people notice that, but like, please don't point to this slide out of the whole talk and say, that's why Herb's saying use auto, it's less typing. Like, that's the last, least important, and least interesting reason. But yeah, it's actually less typing too, which is kind of cool. So prefer auto x equals expression by default, unless you have a reason to do otherwise, on variable declarations. It gives you correctness, clarity, maintainability, performance, simplicity, and those advantages are something that are worth something. It also shows you're habitually programming against interfaces, not implementation. Not against concrete types, but against concepts, which you'll be doing more of in C++'s future. Now, having said that, this is all if you don't need to commit to a certain type. Sometimes you absolutely do need to commit to a certain type. Then what? You can still use auto, as I already teased. So if you look at the left-hand code, which is the old style C++98 code, sometimes slightly upgraded for the brace initialization, but it's the old style of put the type first. And then there's the newer style of start with auto. The first two lines are essentially the same. So auto s equals quote hello, auto w equals get widget, so we deduce the type. And if you need to commit, that's if you don't need to commit to a type. If you do want to commit to a type, try just sticking the type name on the right. It will feel weird the first couple of times, and I think most of you will probably find that after half an hour, you won't even notice it anymore. But let's talk about reasons and advantages of doing it this way, because those are pretty much equivalent. I'll have one slide in the extremely rare cases where they're not equivalent, like of types that you can't even move. But let's talk about the advantages of doing it this way. Notice that we already do this for heap allocation, both old-style heap allocation, new widget, which of course you'd never want to write anymore, and also make unique, make shared of widget. Just naturally, it already appears on the right because that's where the type goes whenever we allocate on the heap. So that's a consistency argument. And does this remind you of anything else, like new-style function declarations, which also put the return type last or just omit it entirely, thanks to C++14? We're seeing a consistency here, and it's not just that the letters AUTO line up. There's a deeper consistency here. Everybody at this point is probably thinking, Herb, you are not seriously telling me not to write int I equals 42, semicolon, are you? Why on earth would I write auto x equals 42? That's a whole nother letter. And also, you could make the argument just looking at those two only side by side that the first one, the green one, is green. It's good, it's terser, it's clearer, right? Let's talk about this elephant in the room. So here are the similar examples that we started with before, and now let's add int. Int x equals 42, auto x equals 42. Without even going further, I could make a consistency argument here. Some percentage of you wouldn't believe me, wouldn't agree, that's fine, experts can disagree, but I could make a consistency argument even going no further. But wait, there's more. How many of you enjoy using literal suffixes for the built-in types, like floats and shorts? Okay, a few. How many of you enjoyed C++11 user-defined literals? How many of you have started to maybe even use some of the C++14 standard library user-defined literals? Okay, some. There will be more of you. The more of you there are, yeah, well, you implemented them. Yeah, and the more of you there are, the more this advice will work. Today, and even with C++98, well, on the left-hand side, I could write float x equals 42 dot, and on the right I can say auto x equals 42 dot f, which is a floating point literal. The right side is better because there's no narrowing. There's actually a conversion on the left-hand side that mostly you don't even think about and never see. I'm not saying it's a big deal. I'm not saying it's the end of the world. I'm saying this is the kind of subtle stuff that you can stop having in your forebrain that you still know exists. You're not being dumbed down, but you're avoiding overthinking as you're expressing the logic you actually want to express in your code instead of thinking about the details of a language. Unsigned long has UL, and I could show some of the others. Same principle. And notice again, we're having the type on the right. And this exists already for the built-in suffixes. But we have also user-defined literals. In C++14, if you say quote 42, quote S, that's a std string. A really convenient way to spell a std string literal. So I just deduce auto and it's a std string. Again, those two lines are equivalent. The auto one, I argue, is clearer. Chrono nanoseconds. I don't like writing chrono nanoseconds any more than you do. I don't mind NS at all. And again, remember functions, lambdas, aliases. I'll throw lambdas in there too because I mentioned functions, but of course lambdas, when you have a named lambda, how do you capture it? The way you capture it is auto, function name, equals my lambda. So the signature, again, is on the right. That is just the way that you do it for named lambdas. And Notice, going beyond auto a little bit, using, which is the replacement you should be using now for typedef, does the same thing. And that works even if it's templated. It does it the same way. Are you seeing a pattern? So when we think about this, we are well through a transition, and it still continues, but we're already well enough through it to see what's happening, where the C++ world is moving to left to right consistently, at least by default. You can still write some of the others if you want to, but as a default, there's a lot of consistency across auto variables, literals, user-defined literals, function declarations, named lambdas, that's including the generic lambdas, aliases, template aliases. It's all good. Now let's talk performance. Because some of you may have been wondering, well, let's go back to that first one. If I don't want to deduce the type, I want to track the type. Auto x equals value. Well, since I was a young sprout C++ programmer back in the day and going uphill both ways through drifts of foot-high snow, 6-foot-high snow, that sounds better, I know to be suspicious of the equal signs because they mean assignment, copy. Well, first of all, that's not an assignment, right? Because that's something we've had to learn, just a quirk of C++ syntax for a long time. That's an initialization. There's no assignment here. We're constructing X of some type. Now, does this create a temporary copy, temporary, and then copy it? Because in some syntaxes, it would copy. Does it here? Turns out, standard says, nope, and that's a good thing. And the reason is, here's some standardese, but it basically has the same meaning. Notice that tx equals a has the same meaning as tx paren a paren when a has type t or derived from t. Turns out when you say auto, you always have type t or derived from t. In fact, you always have type t. It deduces it. So that is true by definition. It's a tautology. And that equals costs you exactly zero according to the standard. Now, if you commit to a type, auto x equals type value, so that's the second one where you do commit to a type, but you can still use auto. Does that create a temporary and move from it? Yes. That copy can be elided, and in practice, many compilers already do elide that temporary, but full disclosure, yes, the basic language semantics are that is a temporary and a move. Compilers are getting really good at it. There is one case I know of where you can't use auto style. It's where you're using the explicitly typed version that we just talked about, you know, auto x equals type name initialization expression, and you have a type that's not movable or cheap to move. So a mutex, an atomic, an array of ints, a std array, those are just a handful of types where you can't use this idiom. Declare them on the left as always. In the array case, it will compile but be slow because it's not cheap to move. But most of the time, you can use this idiom very well. That's the only corner case I know of. For completeness, a few people have suggested other corner cases. I document them briefly to show you I'm aware of them with some sketches of why I don't view these as counterexamples at all. But let's document the list and what you should use instead often in the comment. One recent time I was resisting using auto, I was still on the fence, like, is auto everywhere? Maybe this is too much of a change. You know, every new feature gets overused. I don't want to be that guy. I know I'm going to be that guy, sometimes we all are, but at least here I consciously don't want to be that guy, at least for this particular example. So I wrote base star pb equals new derived in my original guru of the week, and when I upgraded it, I left it be unique putter base pb equals make unique derived. And I myself, when I would go back to this article a week later, readers, when they read the article, would keep on asking, why didn't you just write auto on the left? And I actually changed it to auto. I said, oh yeah, that's right, I should have put auto there. And I put auto, and then I realized, no, that changes the meaning. Because there's a conversion, right? It's a make unique derived going to unique putter base. If I had followed my own advice, which now I feel much better, and I do, and simply stick to my guns and put auto first, yes, that's an unusual construction the first time you see it, and then you realize, oh, it's just auto variable equals type. And if there could be a type, a cast expression or a constructor, an explicit type on the right-hand side, and then it's perfectly clear. I mean, just moving it that much over made it perfectly clear, at least to me and a number of actual readers, that the code isn't a bug. Oh yeah, you're actually doing a conversion there. We just find in practice the middle one was too easy to miss. even though now we're all aware of it, you know, come back a week from now and take a quick glance, and you might roll the dice on whether you remember. It's just that much distance makes it subtle. So preferred declaring local variables using auto, whether you want to track, so it's just auto and bind directly to the type, or stick to a specific type, in which case you want to explicitly mention a type, but you can still use auto. Here are the two syntaxes. It guarantees no implicit conversions, no narrowing conversions. And there's one thing I mentioned on the slide, but I forgot to say in words, so let me add it now. If you follow this style, it is impossible to write an uninitialized variable. Why? Because when you say auto x equals, auto is meaningless without an initializer. It is impossible syntactically to write the bug of uninitialized variable, which is not bad. So consider having some functions in headers also use auto. A new C++ 14 feature, you can have auto be the return type and deduce it from the body, just like lambdas can. That's actually a nice thing to do there in headers anyway. So you can do that. The bodies have to be available. And you want them to track the type, so auto is often a very good return type for those. Since we're talking about auto, I thought I should mention return types as well. So it's simple. And we can tell Nigel Tufnell and all the other C++ developers in the world, who agrees, that to make a type track, deduce, to make a type stick, commit to it. In both cases, you can still use auto. Try it. You might find that it's consistent, simple, and not complex. Give it a shot. Now let's turn to a specific area of overthinking. When you think of how much C++ has evolved since C++ 98. If you look at the 11 and 14 standards, you could point to a few features as being big ones that really changed the game in terms of how the type works and how our idioms might work. Probably the biggest of those is R value references and move semantics. So the idea that we have move semantics, C++ always has been able to deal very well with copyable types, value types. And really, move is largely an optimization of copy. Yes, you can also write move-only types now, which is a new thing, but largely it's an optimization of copy, which means copyable types that C++ has always been so good at compared to many other languages that are mainstream just got even better. But what this means is the community needed some time to absorb, okay, well, what does that mean for my programming style? We needed experience from trying to develop guidelines, seeing which ones worked out, which ones didn't. And I think that this summer, and in particular in the last couple of weeks, and in particular this week at this conference, that we're ready to say, okay, we have got some pretty good guidance specifically on how does move semantics and the other features that are new in C++ 11 and 14 affect parameter passing. And I'm going to go out on a limb and debunk what I think are some anti-patterns and why I think that they're anti-patterns and why the C++ 98 default actually should get a lot of love in C++ 14. So one subtle change that was already happening even before C++ 11, because compilers now routinely implement the return value optimization, use return by value way more often. So you'll see me mention that. But don't overuse pass by value. I'll explain what I mean. Observation. Bjarne is very right. New features tend to get overused. And Scott made in a very interesting point as we've been having discussions over the last couple of weeks about, you know, what are the right parameter passing guidelines? Because a lot of people have said, since we've got move semantics, maybe we should pass by value more. Maybe we should do other things to try to get those juicy R values that now we have access to, right? Like, now we have access to R values. Let's optimize for those. You know, now we're mesmerized and we're going off on that. And we have had such a focus on R values that when Howard Hinnant and others have come up saying, well, by the way, here are the, if you do it that way, you're causing these problems, which I'll show you in a moment. One of the realizations Scott put very well is, oh, you know what? Those problems are with L values. We've been focused so much on optimizing R values, we're not noticing how often those things are actually pessimizing normal passing variables to functions. I'll show you what I mean. And what's important here is two things. The advice is still simple. In fact, it's exactly the same as C++ 98, the default advice that I'm going to show you. And second, you have to think about all of the things your callers might give you, not just focus on the new thing, such as our values. Just as exception safety is not about writing try and catch everywhere, using move semantics is not about writing move and R value references everywhere. In fact, remember I said that in Bjarne's keynote on Tuesday, R value reference didn't show up once in his slides? It will also not show up once in our default parameter passing advice. Let's see. First of all, thanks to many, many people, including more not listed here, for discussions over the summer and leading up to this to firm up. Here's a great opportunity with CPCon. Let's talk about this and talk it through and see if we've converged on new parameter passing advice. I believe that we have. Time will tell the level of agreement, but I believe we have. And so I'm very glad to acknowledge these people and more for the input on what's to follow. Here is parameter passing advice in C++ 98 that is reasonable, default advice to give people. On the vertical axis, we have, what are you doing with a parameter? Is it an out, in, and in particular, is it in and I'll keep a copy? That's, it turns out to be an interesting case to call out specially. And across, we have, well, is the type cheap to copy? Because then maybe I'll pass it by value more often. Is it moderate cost to copy, or maybe I don't know? Or is it expensive to copy, like some big data structure? So for the out case, we've more and more, because we have the return value optimization in modern compilers, we can just pass by, return by value for moderate cost. And you'll notice the footnote, moderate cost means, yeah, if it's like a K and it's contiguous and hot in cache, yeah, just pass by value, or just return by value. That's a new thing in the last 10 years, but we're about 5-10 years in now to where you can assume your compiler does that optimization so you can actually return by value for in all those cases. If it is expensive to copy, like a vector or a bigger array, then the C++ 98 advice was pass it by reference. So that was really like the in-out case, or footnote, return an X star, allocate it on the heap and return it, but that costs you a memory allocation. You have to decide if it's worth it. So I mentioned it as a footnote, but generally, it's the reference is what you use. In-out is easy, of course, pass by non-const reference, because that way you can modify the original. And finally, for all the in cases, usually pass by const reference. But hey, if it's an int, pass it by value. None of this should be news, except possibly that for the out case, we can return larger objects than maybe 10 years ago we would have wanted to do. But this is journeyman, this is not surprising advice anymore. C++ 98 advice. So what's the difference with C++ 14, modern C++ advice? Are you ready for the difference? Don't blink, you might miss it. There it is. Let me go back and forth. See the difference? The main difference is the advice is still the same, but where move has come in is not changing how you pass your parameters, but the applicability of the advice, the default advice, actually becomes even more usable because more types fall to the left and out of the out parameter exception. So in particular, if the first column is now, is it cheap or impossible to copy, such as unique putter? It might be impossible to copy, that's a new thing. The middle column is now, is it cheap to move or moderate cost to move? Notice vector has now moved into the middle where it used to be on the right-hand side. So the defaults have become more usable. And if it's still expensive to move, not copy now, but expensive to move, which is a smaller set of types, they're still on the right-hand side, but that exception case has been shrinking, which is kind of nice. So again, back, forward. This is the slide that I would like you to print out and pin to your cubicle wall, not the next slide. The next slide is going to be, and here's the, if you open the hood, here's advanced advice. That will be the one you're tempted to say, well, I want the advanced stuff, so I'm going to pin that one to my cubicle wall. Please pin this one to the wall. The summary, and here, this is a direct quote from Bjarne as we were working through this. You know, the defaults just work better, and this is still the right advice. That's Bjarne's opinion, it's my opinion, and I think that even Scott and I agree entirely on this, with the exception that he wants one extra line on the next slide to be on the first slide too, the in and move from, and I still don't think that's worth putting in the default advice, because the default advice we just talked about covers all types, including move-only types. and includes passing unique putter by value, just like I said earlier, to a sync function. Now, if you want to optimize, C++ is even better for giving you advanced knobs. And now this is where you see our value references come in. Because notice the in and retain a copy line in the middle part. Now, on the previous slide, that said pass by const reference, right? Reference to const. Now it's, and by the way, if you want to optimize for R values, add an overload of xrefref, R value reference. And for the new case, if we want to break out the explicit case of, okay, I'm going to pass in a value and move from it, then as an advanced knob, if you want to optimize that, you can pass fxrefref. For unique putter, for example, that often won't be an optimization. Like actually writing a unique putter refref as a parameter often will not actually be an optimization. And the reason is because if you pass an actual temporary in by value to the unique putter, that's a move, and then you move out from it again inside the function. So you say, oh, that's move plus move, and if I do unique putter refref, that's a single move, right? Faster, must do it. Hold on, wait. Compilers can optimize that, they do. In practice, even by value is just a single move. And besides, if you're worried about a unique putter move, that's like moving a raw pointer, like copying a raw pointer. I do not believe for a moment that 99.99, maybe 99% of code will ever find that in a hot loop. But hey, if you want to optimize it, move for other types that are movable, move only, but maybe more expensive than move pointer, do know about that one. Now, a few comments about this. First of all, notice there's a red, as in danger, dragons be here, special case. Yes, for those middle cases at the bottom, you can also write perfect forwarding in certain cases. Well, you could write that if you were able to write it. You'll see it mentioned on a later slide, but we'll warn you before it comes up on the screen. Bjarne's summary, which I agree with, is defaults work better, and there are more optimization opportunities than we had before. But remember, they're optimizations, therefore don't reach for them prematurely. That's just good software design. A note here, you might be thinking, well, but I have to write refref on my move assignment and move constructors for my class. Herb, how can you get up on this stage and tell me with a straight face here in 2018 that I shouldn't be writing refref in normal code? This is a subtle point, but it's actually a really cool one, I think. Writing refref is nevertheless an optimization. But the advice that we give here in the in and retain copy line is exactly what you write for your constructors. You overload them on const xref and xrefref. It's exactly what you write to express the L-valueness and R-valueness for move assignment versus copy assignment. You overload on const ref and at const refref. And don't do that unless it's an optimization. Now, the thing is, if you're writing a type that's going to be widely used, now you're the library writer hat, and you will have many users, it makes sense to reach for such optimizations by default. But this is actually entirely consistent advice. It's just when you're writing a class, you'll reach for optimizations more often because you're supporting a larger audience. That is normal. Of course, and especially in the standard library, that's why you see this all the time in the standard library, even perfect forwarding in STL implementations, because they're so widely used. As you go further down, you reach for optimizations more. But it's the same advice as for any other code. Overload on refref if you're going to move from. Now, there is one drawback to that. Let's talk about these options. Again, more optimization opportunities. Those are the things that are new. So when do you write, and I have to say, R value refref? Again, like I just said, write it only to optimize R values, which could be move assignment operators, move constructors. But just as exception safety isn't about writing try and catch a lot, using move semantics isn't about writing move and refref a lot, just return by value, move will kick in. Pass by value, move will kick in. But wait, let's dig into an example. Because one option that's been discussed quite a bit since 2009 has been, well, hey, move semantics are coming. Now move semantics are here. Maybe we should pass by value more often. And there's a really nice article that does a detailed analysis of compiler optimizations, how they interact. And if you pass by value, you can accept L values and R values, named objects and temporaries. And it will move from the latter, great. And you'll still get a copy for the former. This is for the in and retain a copy case. So should I use f of x, pass by value here? How many of you have seen the advice to do that? Okay. So you will want to pay close attention to this nice reasoning. It's interesting, this advice first was as a result, as near as I can tell, of Howard Hinnant, a very experienced library developer. I did most of the Clang-Lib C++ implementation at MetroWorks before that, and much more, who noticed many of these optimizations and then told other people about them. And so those other people popularized this advice. But Howard himself has been pointing out, but wait, there be dragons there too. There are downsides to doing this. And so I especially want to call out to Howard, thank you for educating me this summer about the information to follow about why this advice is actually problematic and what you generally don't want to do, but there's one specific case where it's useful. The good news is this can in fact be faster than C++ and ID8 for the in, and I'm going to keep a copy case because I'm going to move from our values and I still get to write only one function. This is good. But it can also be much slower than C++ and ID8. Now here's the reason. If I'm being passed an L value, a named object. Remember, this is what made Scott say, oh yeah, it's about the L values. We're focusing so much on optimizing R values. What's the cost of L values? If I'm being passed a named object here, I am going to unconditionally copy it. And if inside the function I'm going to move it then into an existing string, that move into the existing string, the move is an assignment. And it means I've unconditionally copied and then assigned. Now, what if that string, if x is a string, or what if that vector, if x is a vector, is smaller than the capacity of the thing I'm eventually going to move it into? Well, if I had just assigned it directly, I would have reused the capacity. It's much more efficient. I would have not had a memory allocation because the destination already had the capacity. But because I express f of x up front, especially in cases like large strings and a vector that might have a capacity already, I cannot reuse it because I'm forcing a deep copy and a memory allocation unconditionally and then moving in. Let's take a look at examples and numbers. Here's an example that it would be a crime. It would be a horrible thing if we couldn't give a simple answer to this question. And yet I have seen them. Have long arguments about how do we answer, how do I write set name? And I won't share all of the answers with you, but some of them are so long that I'm reminded of Bjarne Strustrup's words that, speaking of how C++ is being taught by some people, in particular if they're teaching C++ using C first, but that's not the only one. He says, if that's C++, I don't like it either. So we have to have a simple answer to this. I mean, how on earth could we have a modern language where we can't say employee has a string name and I have a set name function? There should be a simple answer, and there is, to take that parameter, to change name to the new value. But there's been a lot of overthinking going on. So let's step through it slowly, not because it's hard, but to dispel some overthinking that has been happening. Option one is the answer. You already saw the slide. It said in this case, the in plus copy case, unless it's an int or something, pass it by const ref. So you already knew the answer from the previous slide. At least you knew the answer I was going to give. Just pass const string ref. And you know what? That's the same answer as C++ 98. There ain't nothing new here. Let's analyze it a bit. There's always going to be a copy assignment here, but usually much less than 50% of them will perform an allocation. If it's a small string, which on many systems is, 16 or 24 length or 11 or something like that. The std string implementation, every major std string implementation already implements the optimization that small strings are stored in the string object itself, using a union trick basically, instead of doing a heap allocation. Which means that you can use lots of strings in your program and never have a single heap allocation. And if you've wondered why, small string optimization. Turns out this is a good thing to optimize, not overly prematurely in the library, because there are lots of studies showing that the vast majority of strings in many mainstream applications are short. So that makes perfect sense to optimize for those. Even if it's a large string, this still performs a mem allocation less than 50% of the time, right? It's only going to perform an allocation if the new string is longer than the capacity of the current string. which means that if you call this in a loop, it's going to allocate a few times and then stop allocating. Let me say that again. If you call this in a loop, you call this repeatedly, it's going to allocate a few times and then stop allocating ever, unless you happen to hit a really long string once, and then you'll get that capacity, get one more outlier. What if I want to optimize this for R values? Because here I'm not optimizing for R values, so that's okay. We had advice on the advanced guidance slide. Just overload on string ref, on the R value reference to a string, and then move inside the body of the function. By the way, notice I also added no except because it's important to think about exception safety. The first function that takes a const string ref, it can't be no except. Why not? It's a good copy. It might actually do memory allocation. It will do fewer of them, and not many over time, but it might do some. It could throw. But the second one ain't going to throw. I'm just taking ownership of the buffer already owned, and I'm going to delete any buffer I might have already had, but that's okay because that's no throw. So this is actually nice. I can optimize for R values. So write this by default. And if you want to optimize for R values, if you have performance data that you should, then add the overload for name. Now, a couple of notes. When you pass a named object, it's one copy assignment as before. But now if you pass a temporary, it's one move assignment, which is roughly, I actually tested and benchmarked the three common STL implementations, and a move assignment is about the same as copying 4 or 5 ints. It's pretty much dirt cheap. And there's no allocation, therefore we can make it no except. Now I will throw, there is one downside to this that actually in practice almost never happens. But there's one case where it does. So I'm going to come back to this, but I do want to be truthful with you and point out the downside. If you do this, overloading on const ref and R value reference, if you have more than one such a parameter, and the in plus copy parameter, is combinatorial. It's like, you mean if I have like 3, I need to write 8 functions? Yeah, have a nice day. So we don't like that. Now, the good news is that almost never happens, except in constructors. Hold on for that. Or we're constructing an object that has, say, many pieces of initial state. But in most set-like functions, we're usually sending only one value. So this is perfectly good advice. Standard library does it all the time. This is pushback. You're looking at pushback, basically, and others like it. Now let's talk about that option that seemed like the shiny object, and it actually did seem maybe like a good idea, maybe something that we should explore as a new guideline. Pass by value. Now let's think about what happens here. If I pass by value, first of all, absolutely this is simpler code because I get a single function. So I completely agree this is simpler code than option 2, okay? And write for simplicity first, I agree with that. I don't think it's simpler than option 1, therefore you should write option 1, but let's analyze option 3. I pass string by value, I move from it inside, and if I pass a named object, I get a copy construction of the string, which means I'm going to unconditionally allocate if that is a long string, if it is longer than the short string optimization, and then move assign. That means I can never reuse the capacity already inside name. If I pass a temporary, it's good, because then I just have one move assignment, no allocation, it's no except. You notice that no except is not green. On the previous slide, that no except, it was green. Green is soft and cuddly. It reminds you of a freshly cut lawn in the summertime, butterflies dancing nearby. But this no except, it's kind of dark in the alley where this no except lives. This no except is problematic, and I'll overstate it, but I'll overstate it just only slightly. This no except is a lie. It is technically true. Your code will compile. It will never fire. It is actually technically following the rules of no except, and I view this as nevertheless a lie. Think about what it's saying. It is saying that that function never throws. Now, on what basis can it say that? Well, in the body, nothing can throw. That's perfectly true. Why? Because we have pushed the operation that might throw into the caller. If he has an L value and he calls this function, a copy will be performed. That copy could perform an allocation. That allocation could fail. That could throw. But by saying no throw, we're saying, yeah, but that's before you actually got to us. It's your problem. Pity the caller I want to point out that if we tell people to do this a lot, I'm certain you will see people who have, look how hard C++ is. Here's a puzzler for you. I write a program that calls only no except function and throws. Ha 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 ha. Don't be that guy. Or at least understand what that no except means. If you're going to do this, and there's one case where I'm going to suggest you do this, I strongly suggest not writing the no except, even though you legally could, and it would never actually fire, because it's a lie for the reason we just gave. This is at least problematic. I'll call it mendacity. Finally, hold on. We're all adults in the room, but this is being recorded, and we're going to have an online audience. So those of you who have parents, children in the room, you might want to get them out of the room. We're going to have some graphic imagery here now. Give you a moment. Okay, those of you in the room, you may want to cover your eyes. Are you ready? This could be disturbing to some viewers. Actually, oh, that's cool. I actually heard literal gasps. Like, if you want to write a perfect forwarder, you can write mostly just the greenish parts. Like, you still need a template class string, but you can probably ignore the enable if is same, decay t, and the no except, but you shouldn't. If you're actually going to write a perfect forwarder, write it reasonably perfectly. Like, write it right. And if you are going to write a perfect forwarder, then I submit you should be among that small dot of developers in the world that you could barely see on the first slide earlier on because it was only a couple of pixels compared to the millions of C++ developers. But let's talk about it. It's optimized to steal from our values and much more. It's for perfectly forwarding whatever you pass it through. You have to make it a template so it can take anything. But then constrain it to strings. So we're actually going to name the template parameter string, then constrain it. And if you pass a named object, there's one copy assignment, as before, which is optimal. Pass a temporary, one move assignment, no except, it's optimal. So we actually express the no except with the no except std is no throw assignable, std string ref to string colon value. The quote unteachable comes from Bjarne Stroustrup. I agree, this is not teachable. This is an option for advanced developers that if you are a very advanced developer, sure, know about this. And if you might see it in your standard library implementation, you, I hope, will not see this in much production code because it's for very low-level uses. Notice some drawbacks. It generates lots of functions because it stamps out the template for everything you might call. It must be in a header. Can't be virtual. I don't usually hear people mention this stuff when they like the, look, perfect forwarding, ooh. I don't normally hear them say, oh, you know, but it can't be virtual. It has to be in a header. Generates lots of functions. I just don't hear that. I'm actually less worried about the generates lots of functions. I'm just pointing it out because it does stamp out, it's a template. But most people over-obsess about template stamping out functions. I never actually hear bug reports about that, about code bloat. That seems to be more of an urban myth than a reality that's an issue. But the fact that the code has to be exposed in the header is an issue. That it can't be virtual is an issue. Now, I already answered this question, but let me lead up to it with a couple of questions. How many here believe that they could write this code? Confidently. Okay, there's still some hands up. Quick, somebody who's got his hand up, shout out, does this accept a string literal or not? Does not. I've constrained it wrong. This is Howard's code. So I will love to hear why it's constrained wrong, because this is Howard's code, and if he can't write it, we can't either. By the way, I will mention one thing about this code. I actually asked Bjarne in person, so what do you think about this? And in the same breath that he said, this is unteachable, he said that in terms of writing this with confidence, he says, there are very few people in the world who write this with confidence, and he didn't think he was one of them. He could look it up. He's certainly capable of understanding it, but just write it with confidence without looking something up. Now let's talk about performance, because I mean, the reason we're reaching for this stuff is performance, right? So let's measure. Here are options 1, 2, 3, and 4. Passing a const string ref, that's option 1. The default that I'm saying you should always do is the first bar. The optimization for R values is the second bar. Then option three, which is that new thing about pass by value and just have the one function, that's option three. And then perfect forwarding is option four. Here is benchmark code for that employee setName function called in a loop. So it absolutely is exercising the case where it's reassigning the variable a number of times. So every 100 times through the loop, it makes a new employee object. But we are reassigning 99 out of 100 times. Do you notice any performance glitch in this? Notice options one and two are fine for L values and for the char stars. But if you go and use option three, as long as you're in the first case, which is small L values, so you're passing a short named string, 1 to 10 characters, to make sure you fit in the small string optimization, you're good. In the second case, we're passing larger strings, varying from size 1 to 50, because most of those will have to be allocated on the heap somehow. That is the case where you see that spike, and only for option three. This is the problem that we were talking about, where if you just pass by value, you must allocate on every path for a long string, and the same is true of a vector, anything else that could reuse capacity, whereas in the other cases, we could reuse the capacity. And of course, allocating from a char star and having to do an allocation costs you more. But notice everything's pretty cheap, except here is a big pessimization and actual data for if you use option three. Here's a case where it's a pessimization. It's not always going to be, but if you're not sure, measure. So I did. You might notice that the top of the slide says Visual C++. So this is probably a Microsoft problem. It's probably STL's fault, right? Actually, it's not. I mean, we're going to optimize strings some more, but this spike is not STL's fault, because Howard also graciously ran this on his own box in Clang and libstd C++. Yes, I changed the slide. Let me go back so you can see I changed the slide. Same problem with Clang and libc++. So STL being no worse than Howard is a really, really high compliment. Plus, this is unavoidable, because you must allocate memory for long strings for that case. Now, how many of you use GCC? I have sort of good news for you, kind of. Here's libstd C++. Is this good? Warning, trick question. Because it still does the copy and write optimization, which is no longer conforming, and has other problems that would show up in different benchmarks, just not this one. But notice there's no spike. Like, compare, oh, look, Clang, GCC better, ha, oh, pound, 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 pound. Well, yeah, except it's non-conforming. But you know, that aside, and the fact that the other things are slower, and I'm just making a little fun. The GCC folks are great. They've known about this problem for a long time. In fact, in the box they already ship what's going to be the new basic string as soon as they can take an ABI breaking change. So they've been deferring it, but in the box, since something like GCC 4.1 or something like that, I forget exactly, there's something called vstring. How many of you, by the way, use vstring? Yeah, think about it, it's pretty good. I see one or two hands. Are you ready for vstring from that same current build of GCC? Oh, look, there's our friend again. This is a pessimization that most of the people who were, you know, had a fling with passing the string by value advice didn't take into account. And if, in fairness, that wasn't really well understood. And one of the reasons that when I mentioned to Howard that I was giving this talk and I wanted to give this advice, he actually thanked me for drawing attention to it, because very few people, he said, seemed to know about this. So it seemed to be worth sharing some numbers with you here. For vector and large strings, keep in mind that the cost of the special member functions are not necessarily what you expect. You know, for many classes, like say shared putter, which is more expensive, to a copy construction or a move construction? Copy construction, right? Because you're going to increment, decrement the reference count, which you don't have to do with move. But assignment as well. Many classes have copy and assignment and move have different costs. Some classes, they cost more. Some classes, they cost less. Remember, when you copy, you also have to get rid of the previous state. When you move, you don't. Here in this particular case, for vectors and large strings, the cheapest thing you can do in general is to move assign from it. Move assignment is actually cheaper than move construction, especially in the cases where you get to reuse the buffer. This is not the case, say, for shared putter, where being able to construction costs more than, or assignment costs more than construction because you have to get rid of the old state. So many classes, these are reversed. But for vectors and large strings, it turns out that the assignment is actually cheaper than the construction. And so by taking my value, we incur that copy construction followed by move assignment. Well, that's the most expensive operation in many cases for vectors and large strings. These numbers don't generalize to all types, measure, but it's worth knowing about. So thank you, Howard, for pointing out that construction and assignment do not always have the same costs. Here's a nice quote from him that you can read. And this comes back also to Occam's razor, don't multiply entities. He was talking about logical entities, but it applies also to objects, needlessly. And Scott and Andre have long said, hey, don't ask for work you don't need. And in particular, Scott is recently rightly teaching a lot that it's a bad habit to just create lots of extra objects. We want to avoid that. So remember, this is about default. It's not about not thinking, but just not overthinking. It's actually not hard. Write for clarity and correctness first. Now, there is one place I said where you might want to pass by value. One case. That's constructors. It's for two reasons. Look at class employee. It might have a name and an address and a city. And when I construct, I have to pass all of those things. That's the case that's bad for the overload, constref and refref, because it's combinatorial. But it still avoids the case that's bad for option three, because I am constructing those strings, which means there's no capacity that I'm missing reusing. I'm constructing them, not assigning it to them, so I don't care about not reusing capacity. Because this avoids the pessimization in option three in other cases, and it is the one case where you typically do have multiple value parameter setting, for constructors do consider option three. But again, as an optimization. Normally, constref is fine, but if you do want to optimize for R values, in that one case, consider this optimization. This is fairly new knowledge. So by default, pass constring ref. To optimize, add an overload that's no except, often, for R value reference. That's general default advice. One more thing. When you see refref and the type in front of it is a template, what do we call that? Read the slide. What do we call that today? So I'm hearing people say universal reference, and that is a term that Scott Myers has rightly popularized. He's rightly popularized that we need a name for this. Nobody else has stepped up to give it a name. I am going to suggest that we call it a forwarding reference. So one of the nice advantages of being here at CPPCon is that we've had a chance to have discussions about this. So let me ramp you up on some discussions that have happened here this week. And again, just to motivate this, in case you're wondering about the difference, let's say I have class types foo and bar. One is templated and one isn't. Those are very, very different refrefs. In the first case, it takes an R-value reference to non-const. It only takes R-values, and the reason it's there is to capture temporaries. In the second case, it takes a mumble reference, so it takes what we've been calling a universal reference, but I'm now recommending a forwarding reference. It takes it to everything. Notice I didn't say to anything. I said to everything, because it will stamp out the right thing. It'll take const. It'll be volatile. It'll be both. It'll be neither. It accepts all Y objects, L values, R values, anything you give it. And the reason it exists is not to optimize anything. It's a very different reason. It's to forward. The reason it exists is to take whatever you give it, that's why it's so flexible, and just pass it on. I don't care if it's const or volatile because I'm not going to use it myself. I'm going to pass it on to somebody who is going to use it, and he will know and care whether it's const and so forth. So forwarding references is what I'm going to suggest should be the new name for this. So several of us have talked about it this week. Scott has rightly pointed out that this TREFREF is different from other REFREF parameters. It is not an R-value reference. We do need a name for it. He coined that name, and he uses it extensively in his book, whose final galleys are due in 3 hours, which is a little inconvenient because you're not supposed to make big changes, and you just can't make big changes in a book as it's going to press, and that date just can't slip. So we talked about it at CPPCon. Because we were all here, it was a great opportunity, and this is one of the big benefits, just being able to talk with each other. So Scott and I talked, Bjarne, Gabby, others, STL, and we haven't talked to everybody yet, so this still has to be vetted by the community and the committee as to whether people agree that this is a good term. But we all agree that the word forwarding reference is better and avoids, and that universal reference, the concern is that it makes people think it's universal, I should use it all the time, and it doesn't describe what it's for. Forwarding, we believe, is exactly the right name because it says exactly what it's for, what you do with it, as well as giving it a unique name. So we think the right name is forwarding reference. In the meantime, Scott is going to change his book as it goes to galleys. Thank you very much, Scott, for doing this. That is a big imposition, and he's being very gracious so that he's not changing it universally, but he's adding a footnote and an index reference saying, by the way, it looks like forwarding reference is a better term that's going to get traction in the community. If and when that actually does happen, which I believe it will, I know several people who are going to keep using that from now on, then you will find new printings of Effective Modern C++ will switch to that term instead. So, and FYI, we want to thank Scott very much for popularizing that, hey, putting a shining light on this needs to be taught differently. This works differently. And that has prompted us to say, okay, let's try to come up with a good name, the one that we can live with for the next 20 years. So use REFREF only for parameter return types, R-value references to optimize R-values, like we said, or TREFREF, there's that term, forwarding references. One dessert slide. Did you know that C++ now has multiple return values? Just return a tuple, or a tuple, if you're Scandinavian. I don't know what that means, that just came out. Sweet realization, we're already doing it. If you, in C++ 98, had a set of string and you insert into it, what does it give you back? It gives you back a pair of an iterator and a bool. And you would say, if result.second, so if it succeeded, then do something with result.first, right? That's just the convention that we used. Now, here's a really cool thing. That code exists in the wild. It's been there for 20 years, right? Ready? Watch this. C++ 11 gives you auto. So it immediately works nicely with this, so you don't have to type that big long thing. But wait, it gets better. Just hold on 1 second. But we have this nice backward compatibility with it because we could just accept that return value and say dot first and dot second as before. But in C++ 11, we also have a new feature which works well with that old feature. We have tie for tuple and pair. Anything that a tuple can do has generally been added to pair as well as the case of a tuple of length 2. They're pretty much consistent. The library group did a great job of that, which means that I can call that old insert function on set, unchanged from C++ 98, and tie two variables, an iterator and a bool, and it works great. I don't have to say first and second anymore. I tie iterator and success equals function call, multiple return values. If success, do something with iter. The only thing I can't do is declare a variable inside tie, and people are writing a proposal for that, because that's the next thing they want. That's pretty cool. And it works with the existing STL and with your existing code. If you have multiple return values, express them with a tuple. Remember, it's hard to remember you're an expert. Can I just have a show of hands? Like, how many of you are students here? We have a number of students here. Actually, can you please stand up? Stand up if you're a student, please. And please stay standing. Yeah. We're glad to have you here. Now, please stay standing. And anybody who has been using C++ for 5 years or less, please join them. Please also stand up. 5 years or less using C++. Please stand up and stay standing. Thank you. Now, if we can get Chandler up here, while you're standing, is it okay if I take a selfie with you guys? Okay, Chandler, where are you? Okay, I'm going to come down there. Please stay standing, and I want to get a picture of you guys, because this shows we need to keep everyone in mind when we're teaching C++ and welcome all the people who are joining our community. Is this a good place to stand?
Where'd the lights go?
I'll go where he tells me. This isn't the first time. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chandler. Thank you for accommodating, and welcome all of you new folks to C++. I've decided I want photographic evidence to keep showing people on the committee and other places, all the people who are new, we welcome you. C++ is a fresh new language, simpler than ever. Sometimes we are addicted to too much complexity. But there are very simple, reasonable defaults, simpler than ever, for loops, pointers and references, smart pointers, never write delete again, variable declarations, parameter passing. If you have a couple of questions, please line up at the mics. We'll take one or two, and then we'll break for lunch. Then come back here for 2 o'clock, and we'll have our final panel as well. Here, please.
Yeah. In the spirit of simplicity, which I absolutely agree with, are we looking to simplify the algorithms in STL so I don't have to put begin and end everywhere?
Yes, we are looking at simplifying algorithms. Range-based algorithms will be wonderful. There's some real proposals coming.
I was wondering if you could go back to the benchmark, any of the benchmarks.
Mm-hmm. It's all the way back here. Oh, you know what? I could do this way.
Okay.
How about GCC? They're good.
It's fine. Okay. So in the last example on the right, there's something that confuses me. Basically, option 4 is much faster than option 2, but shouldn't perfect forwarding like match option 2?
These were the results as measured on that system.
I mean, it isn't like.
You can download that code and try the test harness yourself. I showed you pretty much the code. Check the assembler. I did not inspect the assembler as to why on the right-hand side they were different. This is what I measured. And in fact, if you go to the others, you'll find the same thing, that perfect forwarding is faster, even from characters, stars, than the others.
Yeah, but it makes no sense to me because we know.
Goat, Stefan okay. is waving and saying, talk to him and he will enlighten.
Okay. I have one last question.
We're going to switch over to here. Thank you very much. Next.
Yeah, I want to say forwarding a char star 2 operator equals should actually be fast, I think. So my question was about at the end, you threw this in there about std tie. And earlier, right, you know, one of your first points was if I say auto x equals something, then I no longer have uninitialized variables. But today, if I want to use std tie for that purpose, don't I have to have uninitialized variables?
Well, you don't. If you use tie for, no. You can't use tie as a reason to have uninitialized variables. Yes, you have to have separately initialized variables. You have to declare them somewhere else. That's why I said the next things that some people want to have for tie is to be able to declare variables in there, right in the tie, for the reason you just said. So you still have to, yeah, wouldn't that be great? But you still, C++ is evolving, man. We're going faster. But you still put them in the local scope before. You still have to declare them.
Right.
But if you don't want to initialize them, that's not what I'm telling you. You still use auto x equals whatever, and even if it's 0. Okay, one more, and then let's go to lunch.
So I loved that you started with all this, avoid complexity and all that, and that you started with the quote from, I think, Bjarne of, we have a tendency to use new things just because they're new. I am not sold on your arguments for auto. Your second argument for auto about allowing your code to be more maintainable, I would really like to have examples of a large, meaningful sized code base trick of changing types of return function, or return,
let
changing
me ask
return you, types and the like.
Let me ask a question.
Having to do any work.
Let me ask a question.
Their work.
How many here have ever in their code bases changed a std map, the tree based one, to a std unordered map? There's some data for you.
Yeah. But you have to do
the iterator
that.
Type changes.
Yes, clearly. But you're going to have to test this while you're doing it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
right? Like,
the question is not whether you still have to test it. The question is, A, is there a code ripple that you have to do manually, or will the compiler do it for you? And second, the correctness of if you get a type where actually the compiler won't tell you that you need to change it, but now the types don't match. And those have existed. I found them in real-world code bases. That's why I mentioned the examples. You, however, sir, I know are in a special situation because you own an internal code base that is monolithic, has great tools for it, where you can simply turn a switch and do these things for people.
They're still not.
Those of us who don't have those tools would like our compilers to help us with auto.
I'm going to have to see, like, war story use cases of pulling this off without there being wild unintended consequences.
All right, and thank you for that question. As we go to lunch, let me ask this. Any of you who are listening to Titus and thinking of you know a war story, please tell him, and I will ask him after lunch. Oh, it looks like there's going to be a line. But I would be curious to answer myself after lunch, and let's get back together.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming. Enjoy lunch. See you back here before 2 o'clock. Thank you.